now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix.
Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. My apologies for not doing the commentaries last week. I had a bad cold and a cough and basically was unable to answer the bell. I feel a little better this week, so here I am to talk about a variety of subjects. One thing that I should talk about at the outset is the large green fireball that was witnessed by many people in, throughout Southern California, Las Vegas. There were reports from a very wide area. And there was a similar scenario that happened a year or two back where the spin that was put out was the Navy, U.S. Navy had did a test of a Trident missile, and that was sheer absurdity, sheer bollocks, pardon my Anunnaki, because the object in question hovered over Los Angeles, emitting a mist, and emitting a bright glow. Missiles don't do that. Missiles don't hover. They don't emit mist. They don't emit a bright glow. The spin that they put out about the last time something like this happened was transparent for anyone who had the eyes to see and the ears to hear. So when this latest thing happened with the big fireball, and what eyewitnesses told me was this fireball, green fireball, I was reminded about the green fireballs of the late 1940s and 1950s. There were so many of these big green fireballs flying over sensitive atomic energy sites and military bases that a top secret panel, Project Twinkle, was commissioned. It included people like Edward Teller, also the individual, the meteor expert that was called in at the time of Roswell. He was also Lincoln La Paz, yes. I think he was from the University of New Mexico, if memory serves. He was called in, and they had a top secret meeting attended by members of Naval Intelligence, Air Force Intelligence, Army Intelligence, Atomic Energy Commission, etc., etc. And they basically came to the conclusion that the green fireballs were not meteorites because of their operating characteristics, high speed, flat trajectory at high altitudes, usually over very sensitive sites. And that was Project Twinkle. And that was, you can look this up on the internet, that was like in the late 1940s, early 1950s. Interesting, but a friend of mine, he worked at NADEP, Naval Aviation Depot, San Diego, California. He was the head of the equipment test department for the F/A-18 Hornets and the Navy's version of the AWACS, the E-2 Charlie, the carrier-borne, airborne warning control plane. And he said early in the morning he was out by the water there at Naval Air Station North Island, my old stomping grounds, smoking a cigarette, and he looks up and here's a big fireball flying over Naval Air Station North Island, headed out to the sea, if memory serves. And another characteristic about these fireballs, these green fireballs, is despite their speed, they don't emit any sound. So that's another reason why it's not a missile or something similarly stupid, because when objects that don't have their own gravitational field fly beyond the speed of sound, they create a sonic boom, right? And here he is smoking a cigarette, and this very large green fireball flies right overhead without making any noise, okay? So, and this is a very reliable witness, this old buddy of mine. He ran the departments which tested the avionics and electronics for the F-A-18 Hornet, as well as the E-2 Charlie Hawkeye, I think it's called. Anyway, the Navy's airborne warning and control plane that they launch off of aircraft carriers, which provides distant early warning for the carrier task groups. So, cycling back to the green fireball that was seen in Southern California and as far as Las Vegas, another reason why I don't think it was simply a fireball and a meteorite, and another reason why I don't think it was a test of a submarine launch missile, which is what some of the spinmeisters are putting forth, was because, once again, there was a lot of military activity offshore. And those of us who've lived in Southern California, we've seen this before. We've seen when the Navy off of San Diego, from San Diego up to Catalina Island and San Clemente Island, that's offshore, but along the coast there, the Navy and the Air Force at times and Air National Guard would scramble assets towards or to observe the UFO activity. And I've had friends that were driving from Los Angeles. They were up there at a business meeting, and they're driving back down to San Diego at dusk. And from, like, at least Orange County all the way down to San Diego, they were seeing offshore all kinds of military activity, helos, fixed-wing assets, planes, jets flying around, as well as UFO activity. For those of us who've lived in Southern California and are in this field, these UFO jet chases are not uncommon. One time I was woken up, the walls were shaking in my small studio apartment because Navy F-14 Delta Tomcats, which were scrambled out of Miramar. At the time, it was Naval Air Station Miramar, where they had the fighter squadrons, the F-14 Deltas, where they used to have Top Gun. Now it's Marine Corps Air Station Miramar. And the walls were shaking because the F-14s were pulling off ACM, air combat maneuvering at low altitudes, tight military turns at high speed. The walls were shaking. I mean, just you can just hear the roar of the jets. And I mean, they were popping their afterburners. And then, I mean, I knew immediately what was going on. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning. I was pissed off because I had to get up and ironically go to work at Naval Air Station North Island, right? Different air base. And so I go out onto my balcony, and what do I see? I see UFO off in the distance, and I hear all these jets in the background. I go, oh, man, they're scrambling jets after UFOs again. What a bunch of morons, right? So, being me, I called up the control tower at Naval Air Station Miramar, and I said to the guy, are you guys wasting your time scrambling fighters after UFOs again? And the guy was, no, that's not us. Go check with Naval Air Station. He said, NAS, North Island. I go, yeah, whatever. And I hung up. See, he was just trying to blow me off, right? He was trying to imply, actually, he was trying to imply that the jets had come from NAS, North Island, which is nonsense. Because the only jets they had at the time were the Vikings, S3 Vikings, which is an anti-submarine warfare plane developed by Lockheed. The fighter planes were out of Miramar. If you ever seen the movie Top Gun, there you go, right? So, and they're not going to take the time to call in Air National Guard planes, either from Orange County, Los Angeles, or San Bernardino, or someplace like that, when they can call in these fighter planes right there from Miramar, and I saw the UFOs flying around, and I heard the walls, you know, shaking, and felt the walls shaking, heard the roar of the jets. And so the guy basically tried to blow me off, right? And I just hung up. I was disgusted because he thought he knew better than me, right? You know, S3 Vikings, the Lockheed S3 Vikings, they make a lot of racket, but they're not going to scramble them after UFOs. They're going to scramble fighter planes after them. So the point of relevance is that these kinds of things are not uncommon. I just mentioned how a friend of mine was coming down from, like, Orange County, maybe even as far as L.A., and he said all the way down to San Diego and offshore was nothing but UFO military activity. And here's another example. A buddy of mine who was the director of San Diego UFO Society, he received a videotape taken from a light plane. I think it was a private plane that was flying around offshore. I think it was North County, San Diego, somewhere near Del Mar, someplace like that. And it was broad daylight, and what you can see is in the water was a glowing, what I perceive to be a glowing disc-shaped object, creating a huge whirlpool. And just beyond the periphery of the whirlpool was what appeared to be like naval vessels, right? And so the person who submitted this to my friend, who then contacted the local TV media, and they actually showed this clip on local San Diego TV news, aerial footage of this disc-shaped object in the water, glowing, brightly glowing, broad daylight, creating a huge whirlpool. And from what I heard, subsequent reports, was that there was a lot of military helicopters, probably Navy helicopters, and or Marine helicopters, because it wouldn't be too far from Oceanside, Camp Pendleton, the big Marine base further north. So, again, we have an example of UFO activity offshore of Southern California. And there are numerous such examples of this, folks. If anyone has lived there in Southern California, there along the coast for any length of time, they've seen stuff like this. If they're observant, if they know what they're looking for, if they know what they're looking at. One other example of UFO activity offshore of Southern California, to kind of underscore my point about offshore UFO activity. Again, I mentioned in previous podcasts, and you probably heard me mention about the UFO activity in and around beneath Catalina Island, in and around beneath San Clemente Island. There's also further north, near Redondo Beach, there's an abandoned SeaWorld there. There's all kinds of spooky UFO, deep black, weird science, military activity. And of course, further south, further north, you have Point Magoo, another place that's very spooky. All kinds of UFO activity happens there, near Port Hueneme, and Point Magoo, the naval weapons testing place. And further inland, you got Vandenberg. So all up and down this California coast, not just in Southern California, but you have all this UFO activity. And on one occasion, this happened in San Diego, in a suburb of San Diego. This was in the early 1990s. There's a suburb there called Bay Park. And one night, there was a big blackout, and the eyewitnesses, and there were many, said that night turned into day. It became so bright outside you could read. And long story short, UFOs were observed. And what was also observed was a mile-long beam of light coming up out of the ocean and lighting up the clouds. I was told this by an eyewitness. A mile-wide beam of light came up out of the ocean and lit up the clouds. and there was all kinds of military activity, blackouts, UFOs flying around. It was another big mess. So this just goes to underscore the point about frequent UFO activity offshore of California, Southern California in particular. So this green fireball, which eyewitnesses have told me looked really large in the sky, to the point where they were freaking out, wondering if it's like end times kind of action coming up, right? And the fireball apparently either came in from the ocean or headed out to the ocean. I got to get some more witnesses and get some more details about it. But at any rate, there was a lot of military activity offshore once again. Helicopters, planes, boats, okay? So when you put the two together, big green fireball, which does not create a sonic boom, seen by countless people in Southern California and in Nevada, and then when you consider all the offshore activity, military activity, no, this wasn't a test of a Navy missile. This wasn't a Chinese or North Korean submarine launching missiles. None of that. I think this was a legitimate UFO event, which garnered the interest once again of the military. And this is where the twain meets, because in our field, we often hear about deep black elements of the military getting involved in this UFO business. But there are times when the military will call upon any and all available assets. We've seen this before, the crash retrievals in the past, Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, whatever available military unit was available at the time to secure the crash site. We saw that with Roswell, where, the 509th Bomb Wing was the closest military unit, and whatever spooky counterintelligence corps units that happened to be around, they went and secured the various crash sites. So the point is that they will access any available units nearby, military units, to secure the area. So anyway, I thought I'd start the show with that little bit of intel. And if any of my listeners has any more information about that, I know many of you listeners are in Southern California, please let me know. Okay. Well, back to more surface level activity, which has the potential to affect all of us. And again, the twain does meet. We've seen time and again in the past when warfare on the surface and in the skies above leads to increased UFO activity, increased extraterrestrial interest, extraterrestrial monitoring of the warfare. And we do know that some of these ETs, the more parasitic negative ETs, have a nasty habit of sucking up the souls of those who have been killed, mass carnage, mass bloodshed on battlefields and other such scenes of mass bloodshed. These entities are parasites, and they will take every advantage they can of scooping up as many souls or shards, fragments of souls of the recently departed, especially in war zones, as much as they can, as often as they can. They are opportunistic, okay? So always, always, I emphasize, not just look at the surface level stuff, but step back, look at it from the bigger picture, look at this from a higher dimensional perspective, and see how various ET groups, ET civilizations, positive and negative, would have a profound and vested interest on what goes on our planet, particularly where warfare is concerned, okay? Because the way things stand now, it wouldn't surprise me if war broke out. War has been breaking out all over the place for some time now, but a wider, more expansive war. So let's talk about that. Now, up until the recent past, we've had the two big wars in Afghanistan, which they started to wind down around 2013, and recently the mummy, John McCain, has been pushing for a greater commitment. Oh, they just dropped the mother of all bombs in Afghanistan, Moab. The Moabites were apparently a tribe or a distinct population, distinct cultural ethnic group of people who lived in parallel with the Israelites, the original Israelites, the Semite, probably Semite Israelites. And the Moabs, the Moabites, they had a god called Shamash, C-H-E-M-A-S-H. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, Shamash. And this god of theirs, which has been identified in some circles as also being Baal, B-A-A-L. So Shamash, this god of the Moabites, demanded, guess what, human blood sacrifice. So what happens in Afghanistan? They drop a Moab, mother of all bombs. Think Moabites. Think living at the same time frame as the Israelites. Think of the blood god Shamash, which some people identify, associate with Baal. So really what they did in Afghanistan was just another offering, another, you know, blood offering to their pagan, to their blood gods. Oh, by the way, it's just been announced that a fossil of a previously undiscovered dinosaur has been announced. And it is going to be called the Moabsaurus, Moabosaurus. Go figure. It was announced right around the time they dropped this mother of all bombs. You see, folks, Moab is a city in Utah. And so this paleontologist just made an announcement right around the time they dropped the Moab in Afghanistan that they're going to name a dinosaur Moabosaurus, in honor of the city of Moab in Utah. Go figure. Another tie-in with those crazy reptiles, eh? So it looks like they're going to push for more of a troop commitment in Afghanistan. And, of course, we had Iraq and all the warfare that was created after the U.S. invasion of 2003, the U.S. and so-called Allied invasion, and then that wasn't good enough for them. They had to create a civil war between the Sunnis and the Shiites, and then suddenly all these other armies, the Badr army, I get them all mixed up because these things just pop up, these armies pop up left, right, and center, and no one knows who funds them, no one knows how they came about, and no one knows really the backstory, but, you know, they seem to have black ops, the Al-Mahdi army, as I was thinking of, right? And then that creates more carnage, more bloodshed, and now, of course, they had to bring ISIS into the picture, right? ISIS, ISIL, Daesh, Al-Nusra. And then gradually over time, they started spreading the warfare back to Somalia. Al-Shabaab is the big, scary woo-woo enemy there. Yemen, they use the excuse of going after Alaki, you know, an American, right? His only crime was speaking out, basically, against the invasion of Iraq, right? And who knows if Alaki was under mind control. We do know that Alaki was actually a guest at the Pentagon at one point for some kind of a social function, and whammo, he turns into public enemy number two after bin Laden. Don't get me started there. And so, you know, they drone kill Alaki, they drone kill his son. JSOC, Joint Special Operations Command, operators are turned loose all over the world, just killing and shooting people for no reason, just following orders, innocent people all over the place getting killed, never mind the drone strikes, never mind the missile launches from naval vessels. U.S. naval vessels hammering places like Yemen, hammering places like Somalia and all these other places, and now they're just spreading it all over the place. So that wasn't good enough. No, now they're pushing for all-out war with North Korea / China / Russia, and this latest psychodrama in Syria, which unfortunately has cost the lives once again of some more innocent people. And there was actually a bus convoy full of civilians that were just hammered by an airstrike, killing just dozens of innocent Syrian people that happened to be on those buses. But let's look at the so-called sarin nerve agent attack, which I'll tell you right off the bat is nonsense. You saw the pictures. You've seen some of the pictures of the crisis actors pretending to be dead one moment and then laughing and, you know, sharing a laugh afterwards in the next picture. If that was a real nerve agent scenario, nobody would be picking up those victims with their bare hands, because just to touch the residual nerve agents left on people's bodies would have killed those so-called rescue workers, which weren't really rescue workers. They were white helmets, CIA, Mossad, George Clooney-funded operation. George Clooney actually made a documentary about the white helmets, right? Now, a lot of those people were really killed. That's the problem. It was not a hoaxed event. What had happened, when we've pieced it together, is that those white helmet al-Nusra friggin' ISIS types, they went to towns and villages loyal to Assad and loyal to the Syrian government, kidnapped men, women, and especially children, brought them back to their lair, killed them, and then made it look as if they were killed in this nerve agent attack, right? What seems to have happened is that, and there's already all kinds of evidence out there about this, the Pentagon had been sending contractors to work with ISIS, ISIL, al-Nusra, al-Qaeda, whatever the hell you want to call them, to teach them how to handle and deploy chemical weapons. It's out there in the open source media that this has been going on. And whether the Syrian Air Force deliberately targeted a warehouse in rebel-held territory that they knew to have chemical munitions, or they just knew it as a place of rebel activity and they blasted a warehouse that happened to have chemical weapons and then the leakage ensued, well, the powers that be, and we've heard this before, never let a good crisis go to waste, right? So once the leakage of the chemical munitions began, then they killed, if they already hadn't already killed those men, women, and especially children, laid their bodies out and made it seem as if they were killed by the Syrian Air Force, killed by a nerve agent. And that whole story is nonsense, so I'm not going to belabor the point. All I can do is encourage you to do your own research about it. But it's just another wicked, diabolical lie where they kill these innocent people and then they lay their bodies out with these stupid white helmets. They're probably the white helmet guys were maybe the ones that killed these people. And then they make it seem as if it was a nerve agent attack. So then that provides the justification, the pretext for the Tomahawk cruise missile strikes launched by the U.S. Navy. This was Trump's opportunity to show his masters, look, you know, I'm going to thump on my chest, sprouting, you know, clumps of hair on my chest, big tough guy, and just as we did in Yemen where we blasted a Bedouin camp with our Tomahawk cruise missiles fired by naval vessels and killing innocent women and children and, you know, old people. Well, we're going to do the same. We're going to fire these missiles and blast this Syrian air base as a warning to Assad to not do these evil things again. Now, here's where it gets really weird. So the story goes, the U.S. warned the Russians about the impending Tomahawk cruise missile strike, who then warned the Syrians, who moved a lot of their assets, a lot of their planes out of the way. And not only that, though, but of 59 cruise missiles that were launched, only about 23 hit their targets and did minimal damage, according to the article written by the Saker, S-A-K-E-R. You can find his website. It's linked on Zero Hedge, Tyler Durden's Zero Hedge website. He wrote a really good article and analysis about the missile strike that Trump or Trump's masters ordered. In all likelihood, and I have no reason to doubt this, according to the article by the Saker, the Russians have electronic countermeasures which allowed them to steer a number of the cruise missiles off course, where they exploded harmlessly and didn't destroy anything on the ground. So only about 23 of these cruise missiles actually landed, and they caused minimal damage because, again, the Americans warned the Russians, who turned around and warned the Syrians. Yes, I mean, it doesn't really make sense. But what is of concern here is what this may lead up to. Because the Russians have basically figured out these people are impossible to deal with. They're a bunch of whack jobs. They're irrational. And they're crazy. And they're psychopaths. So there's no point in trying to negotiate them with them anymore. We're going to make a point of providing air defense, not only for our Russian troops, advisors in Syria, but also to provide air defense for the Syrians, the Syrian military on the ground, the Syrian Air Force in the air. So, and if the U.S., NATO, etc. tries to push like a no-fly zone, then we're getting that much closer to war. So it's just an interesting scenario to watch, observe. You see the lunacy play out, where they just make lies up as they go along, and they don't care how many innocent people they kill, because this is their stock and trade, is just slaughtering innocent people. That's basically what they do. So let's see how that plays out. This is a very touchy situation, and hopefully, as far as Syria concerns, things will simmer down. The notion that Assad, when he was on the verge of winning, he'd reconquered a lot of his own territory back. The rebels were reeling in defeat. Why he would suddenly launch a chemical poison gas / sarin nerve agent / whatever excuse, whatever justification they use, for Assad to do something like that on his own people is nothing short of madness, and Assad is not mad, okay? So now let's shift gears, and we'll talk about that carrier battle group heading out to North Korea. Now, again, here's where the backstory comes in. It's well known for those of us who take the time to do this kind of research that it was the U.S. Commerce Department that signed off on a deal that allowed U.S. corporations to sell so-called light water reactors to North Korea. And these light water reactors wound up in the nuclear research facility at Yongbyon. Now, think about it. This was done during the Bill Clinton administration. Can't remember if it was the first 4 years or the second 4 years. But at any rate, during Clinton's term, Bill, the U.S., a U.S. corporation, sold these nuclear reactors to the North Koreans. See, the problem is that even though one can claim that, oh, this can only be used to generate electricity, that may not always be the case. Because what you can do with a nuclear reactor is the nuclear fuel rods, they're activated, they're powered up inside of the nuclear reactor, and then they're taken out of the nuclear reactor, they're chemically reprocessed, these fuel rods, and the impurities are removed, and what you have left is plutonium-239, weapons-grade plutonium, right? And so it's possible that the North Koreans would have taken that light breeder, light water reactor purchased from the Americans and used it to create fissionable material, right? And so now that nuclear plant is the pretext for wanting to wage war with North Korea because they're seen as possessing nuclear weapons now. And again, we've seen this before. It was American corporations that sold the nuclear reactors to Iran. And Iran was perfectly in their right. Iran is a signatory to the non-proliferation treaty. It's perfectly within their right to purchase and obtain nuclear reactors for peaceful purposes, for research purposes, for production of energy. Right? And that's being used as a pretext to go after Iran. Remember what General Wesley Clark said, that there's a timetable. They're going to knock off a bunch of countries, Libya, Syria, and then Iran, right? And you have to look at this from a bigger, higher dimensional perspective. Iran is right on Russia's doorstep. Syria is a close ally of Iran. The Russians cannot let Syria go fall by the wayside, because then you'll have a whole North African littoral, a whole Mediterranean Near Eastern region overrun by these ISIS, ISIL sewer scum that are going around beheading people and opening slave markets, right? I mean, I watched a documentary about these ISIS types. They openly boast on camera that after they have their way with the women they've captured, they're going to sell them in the slave market, right? And that's exactly the kind of allies, so-called, these sewer scum have. You look at what they did to Serbia, how Serbia was scapegoated, demonized, vilified. Oh, there were probably lots of like mass graves and probably lots of torture chambers there. But it's questionable whether the Serbians did that. But it's, in my view, quite likely that the allies over there, the KLA, the Kosovo Liberation Army, who indulge in drug trafficking and in human trafficking, yes, I can believe that they killed a bunch of people. They created these mass graves. They created these torture chambers. But then they flipped everything and blamed it on the Serbs. And we see that today, right? The Pentagon provides contractors to ISIS, ISIL, al-Nusra, Daesh, whatever you want to call these sewer scum. They provide contractors who teach and train them how to handle and deploy chemical weapons. Next thing you know, all these people are dead, and they're blaming Assad for using nerve agents on his own people. None of it makes sense. It's all meant to generate a strong emotional reaction, right? Nuclear power, fear, fear, chemical weapons, fear, fear. So getting back to North Korea, the U.S. way back in the Clinton administration sells light water reactors to the North Koreans, which in theory they could have used to create weapons-grade plutonium in order to create a nuclear weapon. That's the pretext now, right? So you have this carrier battle group along with some escort ships, and some of those escort ships have vertical launchers. They themselves can launch Tomahawk cruise missiles tipped with nuclear weapons. And the aircraft carrier, the Carl Vinson, I'm sure has his own share of nuclear ordnance. So things are getting really dicey. And I know they're not bothering to consult the Japanese about all this. Right now, there's a lot of South Koreans and Japanese nationals in Korea, South Korea, that are very worried. It's a big problem for the Japanese government to extract all these Japanese nationals that are in South Korea right now. If they were smart, they'd get out of there, the Japanese nationals, and head back to Japan. But if warfare breaks out and Japan is seen, which it is, as an ally of the U.S., then not only, let's say for the sake of argument that North Korea does have nuclear weapons, and let's say that they've been able to miniaturize the, the warheads enough to place them in the nose cone of a ballistic missile. Well, that's going to cause problems for Seoul, South Korea, right? They're already well within range of conventional artillery, the South Koreans are, let alone nuclear weapons. And say there are these suicide groups that are sent to Japan and sent to South Korea to launch suicide attacks. I mean, anything can happen at this point. So, and again, these aliens, both positive and negative, are waiting in the wings watching. Hopefully, the positive aliens will prevent this from spiraling out of control. We know that the aliens, I don't know which group of them, have in the past deactivated nuclear missile silos, messed with the onboard navigation computers of ballistic missiles, and have caused a bunch of ICBMs to go in a no-go status, so-called fated giants. We know they've done that in the past and other things like it. So hopefully if things begin to spiral out of control because of the madness of the, you know, the powers that be, that some intervention will take place. We know that during the dickhead Cheney administration, when Cheney tried to steal these nukes from Minot Air Force Base in North Dakota, transship them through Barksdale Air Force Base in Louisiana, and then intending to ship them out to the Middle East, we know that there were patriots in the armed forces and the intelligence community who stopped that from happening, and many of them paid for it with their lives. Hats off to them, but they stopped it from happening. That's the bottom line. And this is back in the George W. Dick Cheney actually was president at the time. So we know that even on the surface that there are people that have laid down their lives to prevent these things from spiraling out of control. So what I worry about is that things just kind of spiral out of control with this task force there. The Chinese are there, and they don't want hordes of refugees from North Korea heading northward into China. And they sure as hell are not going to countenance U.S. land forces and U.S. air forces, naval air forces, to be flying over Chinese airspace. Same thing with the Russians. They're not going to want, you know, because China and Russia share a common border with North Korea. They're very close to North Korea. Vladivostok, a warm water port year-round, is not too far from North Korea. So if you can find a place in the map where all these things come together that create the potential for escalation of a world war, you could, you couldn't find a better place than North Korea. And so let's see how this plays out. Now the media is crowing about, oh, you know, they launched a missile, it blew up, and, you know, shortly after it took off, yada, yada, yada. And they're trying to make a big deal about it. The American people, by and large, have been hypnotized by this war fever. You know, it's interesting because I even know my labs in the past who know they've been mind controlled, who know they've been abused, who know they've been traumatized by deep black elements of the military, intelligence community, by the CIA, etc. They know. But in the run-up to the invasion of Afghanistan, well, they were there ready to invade Afghanistan right after 9/11. And also the run-up to the invasion of Iraq in 2003, these MyLabs, who should know better, and I know what they went through because I went through something similar. They had a series of experiences and dreams and virtual reality experiences which made them hate Muslims and made them like just want war to happen, right? So a lot of these people that should have known better were telling me they were all for the invasion of Iraq, all for the invasion of Afghanistan, when at some level they knew that 9/11 was an inside job. And we're talking about people that have a pretty good level of, you know, situational awareness, let's say. Now, your average American, not so good. The news drooling, TV news droolers, And also, the Trump supporters are going to have to come to grips with this, because either they have to accept the fact that Trump is a power mad person who did a 180 on all his campaign promises. He's escalating all the warfare instead of drawing down the conflicts. They either have to accept that Trump is a warmonger, or he's the bitch of the real controllers. And, you know, I know it's a bitter pill for them to have to swallow. And the idea that the person that they invested so much emotional energy into is turning out to be just like all the rest of them, right? But just do some background research on who Donald Trump is, and you'll get an idea that he was groomed for what he's been doing all along. He's so plugged in to the controllers, or they're rather so plugged into him, that it's not funny. So I think that we now have to accept the fact that Trump is not one of us. And there's still some, you know, alternative news outlets that are still coming to, you know, having a difficult time coming to grips with that, right? InfoWars is an example, right? They're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, because they campaigned and stumped for Trump for so long, and now this happens. So, Yemen, escalation in Yemen. They made up this enemy there, Al-Qaeda, in the Arabian Gulf. Then you have Somalia, Al-Shabaab. That's the big woo-woo enemy there now. There's all kinds of Pentagon contractors and mercenaries there, and Black Ops, JSOC, Joint Special Operations Command. The media has spent so much time lionizing and edifying U.S. Special Forces, particularly SEAL Team 6. SEAL Team 6 is a component of JSOC, Joint Special Operations Command. Take the time to watch the documentary by Jeremy Scahill called Dirty Wars. And, you know, you watch that, that'll tell you everything you need to know about the great heroes in Joint Special Operations Command, JSOC. That's where Delta Force and SEAL Team 6 are. And you'll realize that, hey, these guys aren't so heroic after all. When they're not totally botching operations and getting killed off because of their ignorance and their stupidity for following orders, see the fake Bin Laden raid, right? Then they're going around just blasting innocent people because they don't question their orders. They just believe whatever they're told. And because by now, so many people in those units are basically, you know, lunatics, and they're basically psychopaths anyway. They fit a psychological profile. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there. They're a far cry from what the founder of Delta Force, Colonel Charles Beckwith, envisioned when he created Delta Force, consciously modeled after the British Special Air Service as a hostage rescue unit, counterterrorism unit. Now it's just completely been subverted, and it's being used to just attack innocent people all over the world, all in the guise of this bogus war on terror. So the dirty wars, the black ops wars, JSOC operations are being radically expanded and have been, especially during the Obama administration, and now you know, the same is going on under Trump. So we have conventional military escalation, conventional forces, and also unconventional warfare, special operations escalating. And also we see all these preparations by the so-called NATO allies, Poland, Holland, Germany, they're all gearing up. Norway, they're all gearing up for war with Russia. So we're at a very kind of touchy time right now. I can't help but thinking about that guy, John Titor. Teeter, I don't know how you pronounce his name, T-I-T-O-R. For those of you that remember, back in the day of 2000, 2001, something like that, on GLOP, Godlike Productions, someone named John Titor popped up and started writing about how he came from the future, and he was part of a small team, and each individual was sent off to a different place to bring back components and his or bring back information. His job is to bring back an old IBM computer or components thereof. And he was from 2033, and he said, what really made his story believable to me is that he said that the people in his time frame, 2033, they have nothing but contempt for the people in our time frame because we just dropped the ball. We just let all this crap happen, and you know, we're too stupid and indolent and lazy and indifferent and apathetic, and that directly impacted them in the future, of course. And he said, the point of relevance is that John Titor said that in his timeline, around 2016, 2017, thereabouts, this big nuclear war erupted with China, Russia, Iran, and other countries on the one side, and the U.S., NATO, Israel on the other. And it was a big mess, as you can imagine. And so, you know, I can't help but think about that. I mean, nothing is written in stone. Timelines can change. Realities can be changed. We still have the means to avert all this. We still have the means to fix all this. So, you know, I started this segment of the commentaries on the cosmic wars, talking about Big Green Fireball being seen offshore and related military activity. And then I wound up talking about Syria, North Korea, you know, Russia. So let's keep our vibe up and let's keep our shields up. The energy has been very dense lately. A lot of people reporting being very tired and very weary and needing a lot of sleep, et cetera, et cetera. So let's just fight through this period of dense energy and let's see where our destiny takes us. I'm still very hopeful. I'm still very positive about an outcome. I really do believe that a certain percentage of humans will break away from this soul harvesting, recyclement, reincarnation, AI agenda. I really do believe that. Do I believe that everyone's going to break away from it? No, because I'm a pragmatist and I'm a realist. So anyhow, we've reached the end of the commentaries for this week. And again, I apologize for not being able to talk last week because I had the cold and I had all that other stuff that went with it, you know, the coughing and whatnot. But thank you for your patience. The best of the cosmic switchboard is in the future. And I really appreciate the good feedback we've been getting from our listeners about the guests we've been having lately. Carol talking about her experiences on Mars and her MyLab experiences, and Sashida talking about her experiences in the military, underground bases and the reptilian bases and whatnot. And David Wargon is our guest this week on the Cosmic Switchboard on Voices of the Alien Abductees. And he himself remembers a trip, a voyage to Mars on board of a craft. So we're going to continue to get that caliber of guest to tell their stories and share their information with you, dear listeners. And we're also going to make an effort to, with these commentaries, bring you the most up-to-date information that we can collate about what's going on at the surface level, tie it in to what's going on at a higher dimensional extraterrestrial level. Okay. You've been listening to Bartley's commentaries on the cosmic wars, and we'll see you next week. Wherever you may be, dear listeners, have a very pleasant time.